Once in a while, an issue comes along that bears scrutiny from both people of faith and people of science. And yes, there can be people who are both. So it is with the issue of the sensed presence. Those stories people tell of being in accidents or calamities and being led to safety by a person or a feeling of a person. Are we talking angels? Are we talking hallucinations? Something else entirely? Today's guest considers the questions and provides lots of examples in his book, The Angel Effect, We Are Never Alone. John Geiger is the author. He's the chief executive officer of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society, a world traveler, and the author of 5 books, including The Third Man Factor, Surviving the Impossible. John Geiger, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
So let's step back to that earlier book, The Third Man Factor. What is this thing the scientists call the sensed presence?
Well, The Third Man Factor is really a study of this phenomenon, the people in extreme environments, so climbers, polar explorers, astronauts, solo sailors, you know, those sort of people in those sorts of conditions, sort of in nature, really out of reach, the reach of help, experience a sense of a unseen presence that intervenes to help them when they're in really desperate situations. And It's very common among climbers, and in fact, it's the climbing community that often refers to it as, you know, I had a third man experience. But it really is something that has existed and has been documented for more than 100 years. Sir Ernest Shackleton is a famous example in Antarctica after his ship was crushed in ice, and he made this harrowing journey out to save his crew. It happened to Charles Lindbergh on his famous solo Spirit of St. Louis flight across the Atlantic. So it's something that has happened time and again, and is really quite curious because it's happening to people. In that book, you know, I described it happening to people who are very earthy, high-achieving explorer types, not the kind of people you might expect would be prone to, you know, describing quasi-mystical experience.
Well, these are certainly people who are going to be sure they're well prepared for what they're doing. It's not like they're going to try to climb a mountain in shorts and a T-shirt. And so this is all about having their ducks in a row, their equipment lined up, taking care of all contingencies. So, you know, if not, in fact, scientists certainly taking a scientific approach to what they do. And yet this quasi-religious experience is happening to them.
Well, it is. And you know, it struck me that, you know, there's so many examples of it and so many different conditions. So you can see it happening to people in the death zone of Everest or Nagna Parbat or one of these great mountains where, you know, they're very, you know, low in oxygen, you know, the extreme physiological and even psychological stress that people are under in that environment. You can see that happening there. And it's often attributed, in fact, to, you know, one of the traditional explanations is, oh, this is a hallucination brought about by, you know, hypoxia, the results of being at extreme altitude. But then you find, you know, nearly as many examples of people, sailors having this experience. So, they're at sea level, obviously. So, that doesn't then explain the phenomenon. So it really is something that can happen to anybody in any situation. And so that book was very focused on that conceit that this was something that adventurous people, explorers, encountered during those high risk kind of undertakings.
To expand the zone a little bit in the angel effect, in the sense that you're not just dealing with explorers or people who are in or generally putting themselves in harm's way, but people who are just approaching their lives in an everyday way.
Well, that's right. I mean, after The Third Man Factor was published, you know, I had literally hundreds of people contact me, visit the website, thirdmanfactor.com, but send me emails and so forth and come up to me after talks and tell me that, in fact, this had happened to them. And they weren't on Mount Everest when it happened. They were sitting in their living room. That kind of story. And I made me aware that something that had been a dawning sort of realization while I was writing The Third Man Factor, that this is really something that could happen to anybody if the stress is severe enough. And it doesn't matter really where you are. It might be quite common among climbers for obvious reasons, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen to people who are, you know, fighting addictions issues or in a car accident.
And in fact, you share that it did happen to you. It wasn't a physical trauma for you, but this was after one of your premature twins, James, died. What was the circumstance?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so that was, you're right, I had twins. This is 2007, and one of the boys had a very serious heart defect, and it looked like we might be able to, there might be some heroic measures that were possible, but gradually it became obvious that that wasn't going to happen, and he tragically died at age 1 week. And, you know, as you can imagine, and I'm sure many of your listeners have had terrible personal traumas of their own, it's a horrific thing to experience, to go through that, to have a child die in your arms, even a newborn who really is, you know, you should be at the very start of a wonderful and long life. So it was a real trauma, and I suffered the grief and the usual fallout of that, you know, kind of trauma for some months after that. And it was, you know, at some point of, it was several months after his death, we were all, you know, my wife and I were both still suffering quite severe grief, and we came to the, sense of having him visit me in my office at home. And I felt, you know, moved by that visit and loved and somehow changed by it.
Much more to talk about with John Geiger. His book is The Angel Effect, We Are Never Alone, about the sensed presence, people sensing a presence in a moment of trauma or stress, or in his case, long after the initial impact. We'll talk more with John Geiger and take your phone calls and emails as well when we return to the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the Angel Effect, back here on the program in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is John Geiger, author of multiple books, the Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society, a world traveler, and the author of the new book, The Angel Effect, We Are Never Alone, about the sensed presence where people feel in the moment of calamity or tragedy that there is someone there with them, even if they can't necessarily describe exactly what that presence is like. Join us on the Exchange as we explore this. It'll come from both religious and scientific sides, and there's a lot of crossover. Phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. The first story that you relate in this book, other than your own, is Jane Pottle. First of all, are you using real names in the book, John Geiger?
Yes, generally. There are a couple that are not, and the people involved just didn't want to. You know, they were brave enough, I guess, to come forward and share their stories, but they didn't want to go, you know, that extra step. But I would say 90% of the names in the book are real names.
And were the names collected through that process you talked about, where people were coming up to you as you talked about the third man factor and sharing their own stories of a sensed presence?
Generally speaking, yes. I mean, many went to the website, and some of those people posted their experiences, joined the forum and posted the experiences. Others sent me emails and said, this happened to me, and gave me examples of that. And a lot of them were making the point that it wasn't just explorers, you know, adventurers. It could happen to anyone, and it happened to them. So it, you know, I think they were trying to make a point to me that this was really a much more universal phenomenon than I had conceded in that last book.
And in the case of Jane Pottle, one of the first stories in the book, she was in a bad car accident. Is it fairly typical when people are in a situation where they think they might die? I mean, is it usually the threat of death that tends to coincide with the sensed presence, or can it be a little less than that?
It can be less than that, and I think it depends a lot on the individual. Some, you know, there seems to be a threshold that each person has for when they might, you know, find the need to reach out for this kind of help. But the bottom line is that people in those sorts of immediate crisis situations, like she was in, where you know, her sports car had been slammed into by a Cadillac driven by an elderly driver, went through a stop sign, and she was in the mangled wreckage of that car, and she was in very, very serious condition, I'd say critical condition. She had internal bleeding and was a real mess, and they weren't able to get the rescue workers and people, initially the bystanders, and then rescue workers were not able to get her out of the car because of the severity of the damage to the vehicle. And she was constantly in there suffering and struggling to remain alive for some period of time, and it was during that struggle that she felt a presence with her in the car. She felt the warmth of a hand holding hers. She was receiving specific instructions as to, you know, to calm down her breathing patterns and what to do to arrest bleeding, and, you know, just a number of things, and a sort of conversational efforts to keep her from slipping into unconsciousness. So really sort of key interventions that she credits with saving her life.
Did she have any first aid or EMD training herself that would have led her to these things, like to turn a certain way to make sure that you don't bleed out?
No, then that's what's interesting, and that's what's interesting. So many of these cases, they, you know, you're right. It may be that, okay, this, so this, and that's, of course, one of the things I've studied in terms of the research is, is this a neurological response to these crisis situations, and is it really just some pieces of information that you have stored somewhere that, that are called upon in this, in this, at that moment of need? And in her case, no, she didn't have any such training, and so, you know, the intervention to her was something entirely otherworldly, and or something that, you know, that she was beyond any obvious explanation.
What I haven't asked at this point is where a lot of the responses came from when the people were getting onto the website or approaching you in person about the third man factor. The stories that ended up in the Angel Effect, are these American stories, Canadian stories, stories from around the world? Is there one culture that seems to get the sensed presence phenomenon more than any other?
Well, frankly, a lot were American. I was really struck by the strength of interest and awareness of the phenomenon in the United States. But it's truly a universal phenomenon. I think that, you know, clearly my cull of examples is focused on English speakers. So, you know, that it limits my ability to get access to stories from other parts of the world. But I do include, you know, examples from Israel. I do include examples from Rwanda. And in the third man factor, there were many different cultures represented as well. So it really is something that's quite universal. It doesn't seem to be peculiar to any one country or one religion. It's something I think that really can happen to anyone. But I think that Americans, and to a lesser extent Canadians, are much more open about it, willing to be much more open and about the experience and describe what's happened to them. And certainly Americans seem to be more inclined to characterize what happened as an angel or, you know, a spiritual experience.
John Geiger is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is The Angel Effect. And, you point out that Americans do believe in angels, but a majority of them, don't they?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a real dramatic cultural difference between Canadians and Americans, for example, is that Americans seem much more inclined to accept the possibility of angels, and even in, you know, will attribute small things in some of the polling that's been done, small things like finding the ideal parking spot or, you know, that kind of thing as being somehow evidence of a guardian angel. It's obviously not universal, but many Americans seem to be more willing to share in that belief.
I'll probably ask for a summation at the end, but let me ask preliminarily. I mean, do you think it's about angels? I mean, as you explored this further, I mean, what were the things that popped up to you?
Well, I mean, that's probably the most difficult question to answer because, there clearly isn't, as far as I'm concerned, there is a neurological basis for this experience. There's a lot of science that's being done that suggests that our brain has a role. But we don't, you know, that research has not given us kind of a clear picture as to what's happening. It's just hinting at the possibility. And because neurologists themselves and others who've studied this, other scientists who've studied the phenomenon, are not in agreement as to what's going on, it makes it confusing. There's some who hold that it's an example of HAD, our hypersensitive agency detection device, this ancient part of our brain that makes us aware of threats, external threats to us, predators or enemies or, you know, people who wish us ill, before we become consciously aware of their presence. So some believe it's just kind of a misfiring and misattribution of the HAD process. Others feel that it's evidence of bicameralism. It's the, you know, the God-brain hemisphere, which is the right hemisphere speaking to the left hemisphere, and that you're reading this as an externalized entity when in fact it's just, you know, one of your brain hemispheres conversing with the other. There has been some really interesting modern, you know, very recent science in Switzerland that's focused on efforts that have succeeded in inducing a presence experience in a clinical setting in a hospital, that experience and a woman who described feeling a presence when electrical stimulus was applied to her temporoparietal junction, she was not she didn't experience any of the incredibly positive, benevolent consequences of that presence. She didn't feel loved. She didn't feel helped. She wasn't given advice. She just felt a slightly odd, even creepy feeling that there was another person with, you know, right beside her, and that person disappeared when the stimulus was removed. So it's all interesting, and there's a, you know, I walk through every one of these possible explanations, and some of them are more feasible, I think, than others. But at the end of the day, none of them disprove the spiritual, and that's something that, you know, I tell you, if I could solve the question of whether angels exist or not, I'd be sitting pretty. That's a very difficult undertaking, and it's really, I think, something that's ultimately an individual belief matter. And even when I was able to show that there are some neurological, you know, a neurological perhaps basis to this, religious people will say to me correctly that, well, of course, how else is God going to communicate with you?
Huh, interesting. So using even the mechanisms of science then as the conduit for God.
Well, that's, you know, many do, yes.
Yeah. John Geiger's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is The Angel Effect. We are never alone. We're talking about the sensed presence phenomenon and what it might be. And as you can hear, John is a little up in the air still about his own views on this. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. John, how much variation is there in how the sensed presence manifests? Is it generally visual, generally conversational, or is it just really all over the place?
Well, you're right. There is a lot of variation, but there's one sort of common theme throughout, and that is that there's a sense of a external being or entity that is there with you, and it is a very tangible experience, and it's a real lived experience. These are not people who have inventive imaginations or who are fantasizing things. These are experiences that people have that are very real, and there's an actual physical presence. So that's the common denominator. Sometimes that presence will communicate with them, and people will describe having a mental conversation or at least receiving mental information. They're not telling me that it's audible, that they're actually hearing a voice, but they are receiving information and able to understand that information. In some quite rare instances, people will actually feel that they see a form, or there will be like a translucent form or something there, but they'll be aware. It's usually, though, when they say that, they just out of their peripheral vision that they can detect something, but when they look, it's not there, but they, again, feel the presence. So I think that's the key, is that there's a sense presence.
Apparently some of our listeners can relate. Let's go first to Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Geiger, the author of The Angel Effect.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I could tell you several angel stories. In fact, I could spend the whole hour, I think, telling you angel stories that I have personally experienced. And I want to just make three comments. I'll tell probably the most dramatic angel story in my own case. I 30 years ago, was diagnosed with incurable life-threatening disease. Basically, my esophagus didn't work. And to make a very, very long story short, what would happen every night is I would basically have to vomit the contents of my esophagus because I had no peristalsis and it just didn't work. Well, anyway, I was at a family reunion in Portland, and the usual night event was going to happen. I was staying in a dormitory with the other members of my family, and I went into the bathroom to do this kind of thing, and it never happened. But I was on my knees praying, actually crying. I was so distraught over the whole thing. And I went back into my bed, and while I was completely awake, an angel grabbed my arm and firmly essentially told me to don't move. And then pushed down on my chest and actually then entered my chest grabbed hold of my esophagus at the neck and basically pulled it down to the diaphragm, emptying the contents of my esophagus. The whole thing lasted 20 seconds at least.
Did it feel menacing or threatening at all, Steve?
The thing was, is it came upon me. I was startled, but the grip on my arm was so firm and so it basically grabbed and then pushed down very hard and sort of a jolt, and then it was extremely uncomfortable when it was pushing down on my chest, but then all of a sudden it went in, like I said, went in. So I mean, it basically grabbed inside my body and did this thing while I was completely awake. I was then able to sleep the night through uninterrupted, which is something that did not happen at all for every night for 2 years, except on that particular night. And I can only tell you that if you have something like this happen to you, it changes everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, your entire paradigm, what you have to sort of recognize about life and living and what's really going on, you have something like this happen, and everything after that changes. Well, I can tell you my own experiences tell me with certainty that everyone has an angel, and not only the odd thing about that, but that the angels communicate, and that you have encounters with people because they're arranged basically by angels. And I could tell you a bunch of stories, but it would take the rest of your show.
But that's the other
thing that I want to point out that's very, very interesting. If you read Emanuel Swedenborg, he had a whole lot of experiences with angels. And one of the most amazing quotes in Swedenborg's writings is that angels communicate in whole thoughts. Now, if you think about that in your own experience, how maybe you were trying to solve a problem in your personal life and you really, really, really straining to come to a solution, and then you go and sleep on it and you wake up and the whole solution is there in your mind, I would say to ponder that, because, you know, in normal human thinking, it's sort of linear and if P then Q logic, and to all of a sudden have an entire solution just drop in your mind, you wonder, where does that come from? Well, if you ponder Swedenborg's comment, the angels communicate in whole thoughts, you might find that you've actually had angel encounters and not known it.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Appreciate it. Any thoughts back, John?
Well, you know, Steve's example is interesting because it's similar to some of those that I described in both of the books. Ron DeFrancesco, who was in the South Tower of the World Trade Center, had a, he escaped because he had what he called an angelic intervention. Angel actually spoke to him, but also he said he felt like it helped him up. He was above the impact zone. He was in a hallway filled with smoke, and he was blocked, as others were, by fire and debris that were blocking their escape down the tower. But he was lifted up and encouraged to go into that fire by what he called an angel. And he did, and he fought through the fire, and he was able to get out. He was the last man out. So that's an example of where there's actually some people do describe a physical element to this. It's not always just a voice and a sense that there's a presence there, but they will actually describe some kind of physical intervention.
All right, let's take another call. We have Blue in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Geiger. His book is The Angel Effect.
Good morning. I want to tell you, I was hiking on Mount Hood a few years ago with a lady and happened to look over between two trees, and something appeared to me. It was about 6 foot tall. It had like a polka dot body and a horse's head, and it just appeared for a few seconds. And I found out years later that what I saw was called a puka.
Interesting. Let's explore that one. Have you heard about the puka before? I mean, the puka is the creature in the play Harvey, isn't it?
Yeah. No. I've not had many accounts of climbers, it's not usually resembling that particular apparition.
Do you find a lot of people who were not believe? I mean, they really kind of fought their own sense of religion or lack thereof to report these things.
Well, that's what's interesting is that, you might expect that people who are already spiritual or religious believers would be, would when they're in moments of great stress and crisis in their lives, would, describe a spiritual experience. But what's interesting to me is that so many of the cases in the angel effect are people who are not necessarily religious. They're people who are everyday, you know, types. They don't attend church necessarily. They're not. There's some of them are skeptics, agnostics, even atheists, and yet they describe a very similar phenomenon.
And the phenomenon we'll call the angel effect. It's the title of John Geiger's book. We'll come back and talk more with John Geiger and take more of your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back with John and you on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, our final segment here for the day on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Our guest today is John Geiger, Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society, world traveler, author of 5 books, including the new one, The Angel Effect, We Are Never Alone. It's about the sensed presence phenomenon in which people in moments of great distress may sense the presence of something else. Could it be an angel? Could it be a hallucination? Is there some other place on the spectrum between those two? Join us on the Exchange as we discuss this. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking about even people who are not religious have these. Within religious traditions, though, do these sensed presences often track with those beliefs? I mean, you generally don't have Buddhists seeing Jesus Christ next to them, correct?
No, but you do have a sort of a tradition of angels or angel-like apparitions, no matter what faith group you encounter. Even, you know, the Inuit in Arctic Canada describe something very similar to this they experience. And, of course, the North American Indians, the spirit quest usually results in an encounter with an unseen being that is sort of like a spirit that then stays with those young men for the rest of their lives. So it's something that has happened, historically. It happens, there's so many references in the Bible that could, justifiably be characterized as a sense presence, type experience because the stresses are clear. But it is also there in the ancient Greek religion and so forth.
You mentioned some theories about this, some scientific theories. And so which researchers did you visit with, and is there a large body of work out there, or is this still sort of a fairly small subgroup within science?
I would say it's a small but growing area. I mean, there clearly are some psychologists who've studied the phenomenon, people like Peter Sudfeld, who's an expert on extreme exploration, and he identified this in his research of people who, whether astronauts or people, polar explorers, those sort of people, and those sorts of conditions. And he has made a study of this. He's a professor of psychology at University of British Columbia, and there are a number of psychologists and experts like that who've looked at it. They tend to see it as a coping mechanism, as a way that we psychologically deal with stresses, that we in effect create an imaginary friend, like children do, an imaginary playmate who comes along and helps us when we are in need of human companionship. At the end of the day, we're a very social species, and we look for, when we're in trouble, we look for help from other people. And so if there aren't people readily available, sometimes we create them. At least that's what that sort of body of opinion holds, but no, there has been over the last few years, I would say a real surge in neurological studies and efforts to kind of understand whether the brain is responsible for this, and if so, how the brain is creating this sensation.
Let us take another call. We have Doug in Casper. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Geiger. His book is The Angel Effect.
Oh, hi, John.
Hi, Doug.
I find the discussion fascinating, and I'm trying to be open-minded about this. I just wonder if you have any theories or thoughts as to why these people have some kinds of interventions that save their lives, whereas there are, of course, billions of examples of people in mortal danger who don't have this kind of intervention, evidently, and die.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that there may be, there's a few factors. First of all, even angels, if you look at the lore surrounding angels, even angels can't save people always. Sometimes religious belief holds, sometimes it's time. It's time to go. And so, you know, if you're a religious person, that may suffice. That explanation may suffice. But I think, you know, really the whole question of openness to experience is at play here. I think that some people, when Ron was on that in that stairwell in the World Trade Center on DeFrancesco, and there was that fire and the debris blocking his exit, he heard, felt a presence, and he heard this mental communication from what he calls an angel, and he heeded that advice. He reacted to it, and he took that advice. He accepted it. He believed it. I think other people likely would have a similar experience, but they would interpret it differently. They would try to block it. They would try to deny it. They would think, I must be coming apart of the seams. I've got to, you know, that kind of, they would react differently from it. So in his case, he accepted, he was open to this possibility. He accepted it, and he acted on the advice, and it saved his life.
Well, but that is a great the point that Doug brought up, and Doug, Absolutely. Thanks for that. I mean, and you cite the case in Rwanda of the minister who felt angelic protection, but obviously Yep. Many people did not.
That's right, yeah. And so, again, I don't know, whether there clearly are large numbers of people who die, and they die in terribly horrific circumstances and in tragic circumstances. But I also know there are people who have come forward and said, you know, I lived or I survived, and I survived because there was an intervention. Arthur Agnew in this book, who's a guy who was a down and out alcoholic whose life was being literally destroyed. His career had been destroyed. His marriage had been destroyed. His children had been taken away from him, and his life was being gradually destroyed in the sense that he was dying because of his severe alcoholism. And he had one of these interventions, and literally that moment he was sitting in his living room. He was about to start another day drinking, and a presence came and said, if you have one more drink, you're going to die. And he stopped, he poured it down the drain, and he never touched alcohol again. And so it absolutely transported him into a different kind of state. He was able to overcome, a serious, battle that he had been waging for years. And again, so there are these specific examples. I can't explain why some people aren't aided and others are. I'd love to think that, if I were in a moment of emergency crisis, if I were in a terrible car accident, that an angel would intervene on my behalf. I don't know if that would happen. But I do know that there's a possibility that somehow we are comforted and we are, given inspiration, given encouragement, and sometimes even specific instructions that can help us survive terrible, terrible adversity.
The exploration is not just scientific or religious; it's also historic. And you bring up the Gabriel Hermann, who has been comparing prison stories in our times with ancient Greece. What did he find?
Well, Professor Hermann, who's at Hebrew University, actually read Third Man Factor and was absolutely inspired by the book and contacted me and said, this is an explanation for many of the apparitions that are reported, not only in ancient Greece, but certainly in ancient Greece, but in other early times and other early civilizations where, apparitions or presences, angels, call them what you will, appear, and sometimes they intervene in, or said to have intervened in battles. Other times, for example, during the plague years, they would come and help people through the terrible stress you can imagine that disease wiping out villages would have on a community and on individuals. So they have played this role historically, and he's concluded that these are not, again, fantasies. These are not people making stories up to embellish battles or their own lived experiences. These are in fact true accounts that people are describing what they saw as an angel or an apparition intervening in these situations. So his feeling, as a classicist, an expert in classical literature and history, his view is that these are real lived experiences and that we have to look at our history differently. We tend to look at those sorts of accounts and dismiss them out of hand. He says, no, you have to look at them and understand that to that person, that was a real lived experience that they're describing.
John Geiger's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is The Angel Effect, We Are Never Alone. Here's Barbara in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello. I just had to call because I'm just getting more anxious and angrier as the program goes regarding these angelic experiences. First of all, I've never had one. And I'm certainly not here to say, like, people who do are just, you know, they're just imagining things. But the point I want to make is that, by implication, those that do survive, that have these interventions by spiritual beings, you know, those that don't survive, those that die terrible deaths, by implication, you're saying that they're not special enough, or their angels were asleep on the job, they were on vacation. And I think we have to be careful about our language, because for the people who do think that they did survive because of this intervention, when they talk to the loved ones of those who did die, basically you're telling them is that, you know, your loved ones, you know, just didn't get that special treatment.
Well, there is the flip side to all this. You're right, Barbara. And it's the whole, like, you know, God is good because good things happen to me. Does that mean God is bad when bad things happen to other people? That's the question at hand here. Thanks for the call, Barbara. Appreciate it. Your response, John, you already explained that you really can't understand why the appearances and why the differences.
Well, that's right. And I don't think anyone would suggest that the people who do pass away in situations, my son passed away, you know, that they were bad people, or that they were somehow less deserving of help and aid. What we're talking about is a phenomenon that may have an organic neurological basis that kicks in for some people, and yes, not for other people perhaps, kicks in when they are in terrible struggles, whether that's an imminent, you know, threat to their life, or whether that's a sort of a chronic but growing problem in their life, stress in their life, that does kick in and does cause them to feel comforted, loved, helped, and in some cases, you know, they will say it's the reason that they survived a particular crisis. So, you know, I don't think that anyone's casting judgment on others who have not had this experience. I think it's simply interesting that this experience does happen to people, and it happens quite commonly to people. And I bet you Barbara has some friends. They might not want to raise it with her today, but she likely has some friends who've had this very experience. Again, it's not to say that the people, you know, people who die, and many of us unfortunately do die terribly, are not looked after. If it is a, you know, neurological process, if the science eventually solves that puzzle, then, you know, we perhaps have an explanation. It's not casting it necessarily in a religious context, although, again, I can't at this point deny that there may be some religious, you know, element to this. I mean,
but it raises the question, though, whether it goes beyond religious and just becomes cultural. You know, and the fact is that you know, whether you're part of a religion or not, it does tend to permeate the culture around it if enough people are involved in it. Christianity is certainly dominant in the United States.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if, for example, you know, just the presence of a bright light or something, or just a feeling that there's somebody there, would be interpreted as an angel. I mean, look at the number of television commercials where you hear, oh, you know, this bright light, and people assume there's an angel there or God or something.
No, you're right, and I mean, even the cover of The Angel Effect has got a bright light on it. You know, when people think angel, they think bright light. What's interesting is people generally don't describe a bright light in most of the cases that, and I talked to hundreds of people, as I've mentioned, for this book, they don't describe a bright light, but they do describe a sense that there's a benevolent being external from themselves that intervened at a critical moment to help them through that situation. So, you know, it's a very, very powerful experience. And I've met these people, I've sat down with them and spoken to them for hours, and I can tell you, they're not making this up. You know, these are, you know, I believe me, I had the detector out, you know, the fantasy detector out, and I was being very careful in my questioning of these people. These are real experiences that people have. And what I'm attempting to do with this book is explain or understand those experiences. But I think the most remarkable thing is the fact that those experiences can and do happen to people. I think that more than anything, I'm absolutely, utterly convinced that this is an experience that any one of us potentially can have in our lives.
So, John Geiger, you raised this in The Third Man Factor, carried it forward in this book, The Angel Effect. Does it continue from here, or do you think you're going to be able to put this to rest for a while?
Well, I feel like I probably my own journey of exploration into this subject. You know, my other books have been on the fates of Arctic expeditions that have been wiped out and that kind of thing. I headed down this road because of its impact on explorers. It's something that, again, people like Ernest Shackleton, Lindbergh, Joshua Slocum, the first man to circumnavigate the world solo, have come forward and said, this happened to me, Reinhold Messner. So I got into this, but I'm not an angelologist, and I have approached it through, you know, quite a serious, as a serious study. But I've covered off, you know, the exploratory in nature type examples, and now the more domestic routine examples that, you know, where it could happen to any one of us. I think I've sort of covered the ground.
All right. John Geiger is the author of The Angel Effect, We Are Never Alone, Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Canadian Geographic Society. John, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange today.
Real pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. Tomorrow on The Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the process of restoring land in the Trinity River Basin and how that restoration has been questioned. We'll talk about a different river, about mercury levels in the Rogue, and some discussion about that as well. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll meet the author of How to Meet and Talk to Anyone. We'll meet and talk to that author, I'm sure, at great length. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant on the controls today, Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.